next year as well. So we're going to continue to build out this platform or this portfolio of software solution stacks. And the deployment, what we're seeing is actually those being deployed across every market that we serve. So we're seeing, now it's over time depending on the market, but for instance, Sense AI, we're seeing that software stack being used in computing applications. It can be used in industrial applications. Obviously, it has consumer applications as well. We're seeing interest in Sentry across certainly server applications, but there's other computing applications and industrial applications where that has relevance. And so it's pretty broad-based deployment. And, you know, in terms of, you asked about, does it grow our market? Yeah, it does in the sense of that it makes it much easier for customers to adopt our products. And so what we're seeing is some examples of where customers may not have a history using FPGAs and may not have a lot of comfort with FPGAs. By providing them a complete solution stack, we're able to help those customers switch to our devices very easily. So for instance, switch from a microcontroller device over to our devices along with our software solution stack. So it helps new customers make that transition more easy. And then also, as you mentioned, it does create much more stickiness with our customers as they integrate that software into their system level software. That makes our solutions very sticky over a multi-generational basis.
Great, that's really helpful, thank you. And I had a question, follow-up question on the gross margins, if I may. As you kind of, you know, approach the, you know, the low 60s, and I apologize, I forgot if your target gross margin was 62% or 60% plus, maybe if you could just remind us of that longer term gross margin target, is as you approach that, do you think about reevaluating that target? Is there a hard limit in the low 60 range, or is, you know, other, you know, like Xilinx, I think, is in the high 60s for another, you know, FPGA benchmark there? Is there like a physical limit to the gross margin here, or is this kind of, you know, your initial target, is that kind of like a milestone that you work towards and then you reassess as you hit it? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's more as you just summarized. I think that's an initial milestone and we'll reassess once we've achieved that milestone. Just to be clear, it was the target that we had put out was greater than 62%. And we had shared that at our investor day back in May of 2019. And, you know, clearly we've made significant progress since then. I mean, just this most recent quarter in Q3, gross margins went up, I think it was 170 basis points year over year. So we remain focused on continuing to expand gross margins. Obviously, our first focus is to get to that greater than 62% target. And I think once we get there, we'll reevaluate, you know, what the target should be. But I don't see, as you would call it, a hard limit at 62. I think there's room beyond that, but we, you know, we'll share that once we get past the 62 milestone. And just as a reminder of the gross margin expansion, kind of where that's coming from, is part of it is our pricing optimization strategy. We built that strategy out in late 2018, and we started implementing that in 2019. That continues to yield benefit, and we continue to drive that strategy moving forward. And that strategy is really about making sure that our products are priced for the right value in the market. They bring a significant amount of differentiation to our customers, so we want to make sure those products are priced correctly in the marketplace. And then the other part of the gross margin expansion has been the roadmap of product cost improvements that we've had. So we've had a multi-year roadmap of product cost improvements we've been executing to, and that's the other portion or the other driver of the gross margin expansion. And then there's been some mix change as well, but the two main drivers are that pricing optimization and product cost improvements.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Your next question is from Christopher Rowland of Susquehanna. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the question. I guess first on the industrial and auto beat, I was wondering if maybe we could isolate automotive more specifically here. How big is it? And then perhaps if you could talk about the kind of sequential bounce back we had for automotive more specifically here, and what applications might be driving that. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So in industrial auto, so that segment for us is the vast majority of the revenue is industrial. Automotive is still a pretty small part of that segment, although we do see automotive as a long-term growth driver for us. We have a healthy design win funnel in automotive electronics. We're getting designed into a number of different new types of applications in automotive electronics. Of course, that part of the market ramps slowly. Those are long time to revenue design win cycles. So it drives more long-term growth, but we do see it as a good long-term growth driver. But for today, that segment is mostly industrial. So that sequential improvement that we saw from Q2 to Q3 of 8% up sequentially or 14% up year over year, that's almost all driven by industrial. And I would say a couple things going on there in terms of the sequential improvement. If you recall back in Q2, we did see some softness in industrial related to COVID-19 and the market impact of COVID-19. We started to see that end market demand strengthen in Q3. So that was good to see industrial end market demand strengthen. But on top of that, there's lattice growth in the industrial segment in applications like industrial automation, robotics, industrial safety, embedded vision, that's growing on top of that that end market improvement. So we're quite pleased with overall progress that we've been making in industrial and automotive. And, you know, I think our performance in this segment has been quite strong despite the COVID-19 backdrop this year.
Okay. I guess one for Sherry, too. For licensing, that one was kind of unexpectedly strong. I'm assuming nothing's changed here. With licensing, if there has, I'd love to know about any updates there. But, you know, I think it was 150 basis point benefit there to gross margin for the quarter. Sherry, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that and how gross margins kind of flowed here if you X out that benefit maybe versus expectations.
Yeah, thank you for the question. So in terms of the higher IP licensing revenue in Q3 versus what we had expected, it did come in higher than we expected. This area can be difficult to forecast. When we look at Q4, we expect it to be more in the normal range of $3 to $5 million versus the slightly higher amounts that it was in Q3. When you look at the product gross margin, it was down about 60 basis points sequentially. So when you exclude the IP component that you mentioned, it was down sequentially. But if you remember in our Q2 earnings call, we said that we anticipated that we would experience some gross margin headwinds within our market segments. And that's ultimately what happened. And so when you look at our product gross margin year over year, we saw an increase of 170 basis points. And that's really coming from our gross margin expansion strategy, as Jim mentioned, with pricing optimization, product cost reductions, and some mix. So as we continue to execute toward our long-term model of greater than 62% that we laid out in our analyst day next year, that's the way that you can kind of think about that.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Your next question is from Alessandra Vici of William Blair. Your line is now open.
Hey, everyone. Congratulations on a great quarter. Sherry, I have a question for you as well, if you can. It looks like your DSO decreased nicely this quarter from last quarter. If I recall, I believe last quarter you had some one-time things like due to supply constraints and mix and back-end nature of the quarter. But can you maybe remind us on how we should be thinking about the DSO target going forward?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Alex. So we did see DSO improvement in Q3. We had the improvement of 14 days. We achieved a 65 DSO the end of the quarter, and that was really due to improved shipment linearity. As you referenced in Q2, we did experience supplier constraints within the supply chain due to COVID-19 restrictions. So our ops team worked through those constraints last quarter and really enabling them to generate an improvement in shipment linearity in Q3, and that's what generated the 14-day improvement during the quarter. So we're going to continue to work on improving our DSO, but there can be fluctuations on a quarterly basis just due to the timing of when our customers want the product. But we, you know, our goal is to generate further improvements there. And but again, there could be some fluctuations on a quarterly basis.
Great, thank you. That's helpful. And then similarly on the operating expense line, Lattice has done a tremendous job sort of keeping those in check and coming in sort of at the lower end or better than expected. As we look forward to next year and the continued new product introductions, tape-outs, attempts at gaining traction in potentially new end markets and verticals, how should we think about OpEx growth relative to maybe revenue growth or some other metric?
Yeah, so the way I would look at OpEx, I'll comment on the short term and then kind of direct you to our long term model that we laid out at our analyst day last year. So during the quarter, OpEx spending was down. We had some spending efficiencies as well as some benefits from lower payroll taxes. When we look to our Q4 guide, which is slightly higher at the midpoint, that's going to be due to program costs, so higher program costs as we roll out our Nexus product in Q4 that Jim mentioned. And then when you look into, you know, further out beyond the next quarter, at our analyst day last year, we talked about our goal for OpEx to be at 35%. So we're actually at 35% in Q3, but what we are going to continue working on is sort of dialing in on the mix between R&D and SG&A. And so the goal that we laid out last year was a 15% target for SG&A and then for R&D to be around 20%. And so we've got a little ways to go on SG&A to get further down to the 15% goal, but that's how you can think about overall OPEX, a target of 35%, and then within that, the R&D and SG&A composition.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's it for me.
Your next question is from Hans Mosesmann of Rosenblatt. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thanks. Congrats, guys. Good execution. Hey, Jim, I don't know if you've ever kind of split out on the computing side of your data center business, specifically between, you know, your FPGAs that are aligned with the actual motherboard or server CPU and, say, acceleration ASICs or GPUs or network interface cards and storage. I'm not sure if you've done that, but if you could provide us some flavor of your exposure in those other markets that seem to be growing quite nicely.
Yeah, Hans, we haven't broken that out. I would say most of the revenue, though, is associated with FPGAs on the main CPU board, usually doing control or security type functionality on the main CPU motherboard, although we are used on other cards as well. So we are used on daughter cards, accelerator cards, and other type of sort of ancillary cards, ancillary to the main motherboard. But I would say that most of the revenue is from that part of the market is driven from the main CPU motherboard.
Okay. On Huawei, can you give us a reference point? Since there's no part of Huawei included in your outlook for Q4, how much was it roughly in Q3 and also Q2, just as a reference point?
Yeah, maybe I'll just give you the full year since we know what Huawei revenue is going to be at this point, given that we haven't assumed any for Q4. Huawei revenue for this year would have been, let's say, low single digits this year, kind of in the 2%, maybe 2-3% range, low single digits.
Okay, that's helpful. And then the last question I have. On 5G, I don't know if I may have missed it. How is that particular end market doing for you guys? It's an area of penetration or market share gain. So any updates there would be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, Hans, on 5G, we were pleased again in Q3. 5G grew from a year-over-year standpoint. We've seen really good growth in revenue for 5G through the first three quarters of this year relative to last year. It was a nice growth contributor this year, and we expect it to grow again next year. You know, we're still early in the 5G rollout cycle. If you look at worldwide deployments, we're still early in that cycle. And again, we've got, you know, 30% more content in a 5G base station than we did in a 4G. So we expect it to be a good long-term growth driver, a good multi-year growth driver for us as, you know, as deployments happen worldwide over the coming years.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Your next question is from Richard Shannon of Craig-Hallum. Your line is open.
Hi, Richard. If you're speaking, you might be on mute. We can't hear you. So, Richard, we can't hear you.
Richard Shannon, your line is now open. You may ask a question. Once again, to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone.
Operator, do you want to go ahead and move to the next caller?
There's no further questions, and I would like to turn it back to Mr. Jim Anderson, CEO, for any further comments.
Okay, thank you, operator, and thanks everybody for being on the call today with us. You know, we're pleased with our continued progress, but we have a lot more work to do as we unlock the full potential of Lattice. We're excited about the future of Lattice, and we remain focused on consistent execution of both our business strategy and our product roadmaps. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today, and operator, that concludes today's call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.